podcast, anyone?
Tom and Loggy and a K-Rock audio presentation of the finest quality.
Bundaberg. I'm sure it's lovely. I don't know. I've never been. You'd probably fly to Bundaberg, though. And if you are sitting in the middle seat of the three, it's a bit of a punish, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So if you don't know the people, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, generally. And so sometimes, have you ever paid for seat placement?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You care that much?
In certain situations, like if it's a girls' trip or something.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
And if it's long flights.
Yeah, like if you're going on a holiday with your partner, it's the first time in ages, it's like, yeah, let's try and get two seats together.
You'd be pretty unlucky to not get two seats together anyway.
Mate,
yeah?
You'd be surprised.
Really?
Yeah.
If your booking's the same, I guess if you girls or three have, like, booked individually,
yeah,
then it might be tough. Yeah. No, that's fair. Subway in America are doing something amazing on Tuesday. They say that if you're flying Tuesday, so Jan 27th,
mm,
this is in America, so it's a bit, it's not.
Date sensitive.
Yeah, but it's also a bit unfair.
Oh.
Do it in Australia too. Come on.
Well, they might.
If you're flying Tuesday, Jan 27th, and you're assigned a middle seat, a.k.a. the sandwich seat.
Yeah, nice.
We're going to give you a free Subway sandwich, essentially, to... Because they call, you know, the Subway's, like, it's a roll, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, foot long. $20 Subway gift card to everybody who wants to claim one.
Wow.
All you got to do is upload a picture of your boarding pass or whatever with your seat on it. And if they...
That's cool.
...can prove that it's a middle seat, mm, then you get a free Subway.
I would say that you're not the sandwich, though. I would say you're the meat.
Meat seat.
It's the meat seat.
It's the meat seat.
Can we get a voucher for some meat?
Cut above Family Butchers.
Yeah.
Yep.
Meatballs.
Doing a deal if you assign the meat seat. Can I pay extra for the meat seat?
Let's do that from Avalon.
Oh, amazing.
Come on. Cut above. This is your time to shine.
A little bit of Cabana.
Give us the meat seat.
It's the Tom and Loggy podcast. It's their radio show in a podcast.
Two-time Davis Cup winner. Reaching the finals of the 98 US Open and Wimbledon in 2003, former world number 8, the scud, the poo, Mark Philippoussis joins us right now. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, guys. How are you guys doing this morning?
We are good.
We're great.
We are good. Now, Lauren is just keeping a lid on it because, as I'm sure, we've had you on the show before and I'm sure she made it weird last time, so she's a huge fan. Get out of the way. Blah,
no,
blah,
no,
blah.
No. I'm just gonna say, Mark, I'm sorry, okay? I can't help it. As a 40-year-old, I'm normal now, but yeah, when I was 13, 14, going through that transition, you were a bit of an awakening for me. And I won't lie, I was obsessed with you and I used to cut out photos from the newspaper and not do any kind of weird
stuff.
Well,
she stopped scratching the eyes out of them. So.
Not doing the weird with them, but
your
it was
eyes
just
are intact. That's good.
Yeah, like I, you know, it was just like family outings to the beach. I refused to go to because you were playing and I had to watch. So I'm sorry.
Well, that's amazing. I appreciate the support.
Thank
that's
you.
Beautiful to hear.
Thank you. I appreciate you not being weirded out.
Fast forward 25 years and the Oz Open is in full swing at the moment and there are still some Aussies in play.
Yeah, the Oz Open is in full swing, as you said. Weather's been fantastic. The crowds are amazing. The numbers going in every day, I heard, are just breaking records. And what they've built here is quite incredible. And I watched a great match, Inglis. I actually watched Inglis win last night, 7-6 in the third. And that is a beautiful story right there, qualifying and now into the third round. Only, female Aussie left. And, there's still some men going strong. So it's been great.
Well, we've got the Demon playing tonight, which is very exciting as well.
Yeah, Alex is, you know, he's up for it. He's worked incredibly hard. He had his best year last year, finishing the top 10, and he's looking good. He's looking good. Look, he's got a couple of matches to go, but we're all looking forward to that, hopefully getting to that quarterfinals and playing Alcaraz. But he's got some work to do, and he's somebody who puts everything on the line. He's incredibly tough physically and mentally and works hard and he's fun to watch.
We do expect him to hopefully go through to at least the next round, but we are getting to that point now where the seeds are starting to play each other. Are there some other big games that you're sort of keeping an eye on or you're looking forward to over the next 24 hours?
Look, I just really have been enjoying some great matchups, even from the first round. I know that the seeded players are starting to are going to be meeting each other soon, but there's been amazing matches every day. I just watched Andrey Vavrinka win 7-6 in the fifth. Was it 7-6 in the fifth last night? Yeah, that was amazing. His story, it's his last year playing, and he's looking good. A lot of energy on the court, and there's just been some great matches everywhere, even especially on the first week has, I think, the best matches on the outside courts, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so good to walk around the first week. But it's just been, yeah, it's been good watching.
Does this just bring back so many memories for you, like being able to walk out on that court and have the whole stadium cheer for you? I mean, you must always get these memories back and feel quite good about it.
Absolutely. The energy, when you walk out on a stadium like that and you're playing in Australia, it gives you goosebumps. It still does. It brings back memories. And the amount of times where you're not feeling 100% and obviously you're not playing your best and that energy from the crowd and enthusiasm and you know, has got me through matches, especially for the Australians playing. You know, you're not feeling 100% or physically, and as I said, not playing your best and you're trying to find a way. But that support from the crowd, that energy from the crowd gets you through those matches. And that's why, as an Australian, there is nothing better playing, you know, on your home soil.
Mark, you've been there on sort of that side of the line or the boundary, you know, to put it into a footy sort of term. But you're also on the other side of the lines and either side of the lines and keeping a real close eye on the lines this year, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. It was, you know, it was a lot of fun doing that ad with Emirates.
The chief testing officer you were this year.
Chief testing officer, yeah. They sent me what they were thinking and I just read it and I just thought, this will be a lot of fun. And then we just had some good people filming over two different days and we just had fun with it. And you always hope it comes together well. And I think it did and I really enjoyed working, you know, with some great people from Emirates and Australian Open. And I think it did. That part with the grass, I was actually supposed to pick it up and look at it and see if it was the right height.
Oh,
said, you know what? How about if I taste it?
Yeah. I was actually thinking, was that real?
Yeah. And I said, how about, you know, if you taste it? I'm like, and I said, you know, let me put it in my mouth. Let me taste it. I thought, if we're going to have some fun here, let's go for it.
Go for it.
Good on you,
Mark.
And
they did two different, and ended up picking my one. Thank God, because it didn't taste great. So I'm glad at least I picked it.
Hey, before we let you go, As We Create is your brand. It is very cool. You've got a lot of great stuff on there, aswecreate.com. You can check it out. Mm. And because you're in the fashionscape now, what are your thoughts on Naomi Osaka coming out the other day in the full get-up? It was like a fashion moment. Is this the new wave for tennis coming forward?
Look, I did not watch that match live. I saw it the next day, and I saw her walk out, and I loved it.
Yeah.
I thought it was unbelievable. I really did. It blew me away, just the way she kept character with her head down, you know, walking on the court. I really thought it was beautiful. I really did. I do appreciate when, you know, tennis, and these guys are playing tennis, but they're also being themselves and showing their character and showing who they are as a personality. And I thought that was amazing, and I loved it. My only thought about this was, oh my God, she's opened up an umbrella inside. Is that a good thing?
Oh, yes!
You know, does she want to start out the Australian Open with opening up an umbrella inside the house? You know, as kids, if you went to open up that umbrella, I think there was a slipper would boomerang around the corner from somewhere, smack you in the head. So, you know.
And then you get spat on.
You know, So I just, that was my own thinking, my God, the umbrella. Everything else is amazing, but the umbrella. But it's good.
So far, so good for Naomi. And so good to speak to you this morning, Mark Philippoussis. Thanks so much for your time. Thanks for the insight on the Australian Open. And hopefully we can catch up with you again before it all wraps up.
Yeah, I would love that, guys. I appreciate your time.
It's a radio show in a podcast. And now in your ears, it's the Tom and Loggie podcast.
Now, we went to Lawn at the start of the week to see a whole bunch of cars. hanging where they shouldn't be.
Yes.
Because they got swept out to sea in the floods that happened 8 days ago now. Mm. And emergency service crews were like, you know what? Cars shouldn't be there and we're going to get them out. Now, I wasn't sure how they were going to do that. Then we found out it was happening via helicopter.
Yeah.
And that happened yesterday.
Yeah.
Leading the recovery mission was SES's Chris Longmore, who joins us right now. Chris, good morning.
Morning, Tom and Loggie.
Mate, yeah, the helicopter, stroke of genius. We were tossing over ideas like, is it a little tugboat sort of thing?
With a crane on it.
Did you have any other options or was it always going to be a helicopter?
No, we looked at a range of options before landing on the helicopter.
Yeah.
We looked at water-based recovery, we looked at land-based recovery, and we looked at air-based recovery.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, you'd recognise Cumberland River, Wye River, spectacular parts of the world, incredibly sensitive environmental areas, and really significant from a traditional owner cultural perspective. So in looking at land-based recovery and water-based recovery, we kind of landed that they would have a really significant impact potentially on both environmental and cultural values. Therefore, air was the best way to pull those vehicles out.
When you say it like that, I mean, water-based recovery, I think water's the problem, isn't it? It's not the solution.
Yeah.
We need more water.
That's right. So, air-based was the way to go. We had a specialist water salvage crew come in, and you'll have seen the vision of those divers out there yesterday morning, rigging those cars up. And then we lifted them up to air, and then yesterday throughout the day and the evening relocated those cars by road to a secure storage location so they can be reconnected with their owners, insurers, and move on the next phase in recovering from this event.
Got a feeling there might be write-offs, but we'll wait and see what the insurer says. Now, Black Hawk helicopter was used. Did you utter the words, "Oh my God, this is sick," yesterday? Because I can imagine, you know, it's not something we see all the time. So were you quite impressed as well with all of your efforts?
Yeah, look, it was a pretty impressive scene out there. Look, it's fair to say recovering 14 vehicles from the ocean is not something that we all do every day.
Mm.
Thankfully so. But no, the teams down there did an incredible effort, and I really got to say, there were so many players involved in yesterday's operation, and it was really amazing to see both agencies, departments, community council really come together to put community at the centre of what we were trying to achieve, and work collectively to achieve what was a really positive result for the Great Ocean Road community in the recovery of those vehicles from the ocean.
Chris, you got 14. Is that all of them? Do you get them all?
We're aware that there's still one caravan frame that's well and truly wedged in and under the sand out there around the Cumberland River.
Yeah.
And we're also aware that there's potentially some further vehicles that have been unable to be located. But we got everything that we set out to achieve yesterday, and that's a really significant step forward.
Mm.
And we work with local government and land managers around their approach as we move forward to any further recovery that's required.
Mm. A few fish out there just loving their new Jayco setup. Thank you very much.
Just... Tony, Deb and the team.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we're serious. Look, did you enjoy a well-earned rest at the end of this, Chris? Did you get shouted a few beers, you and the team, or enjoy some of the great local establishments down there between Lawn and Skeens Creek yesterday once the roads opened?
Yeah, look, the team was busy until last night, really moving those vehicles across to where they're now located, but certainly took a moment at the back end of the day to reflect on the achievements of yesterday. And again, it's a really significant step for the Great Ocean Road community in terms of removing those and encouraging visitors to, again, visit what is a spectacular part of the world in what's a really important time of year for local business.
Chris, it was a spectacular rescue effort, or a recovery effort is probably the better way to describe it. It had all of Australia watching, all of Australia talking. I imagine the job's not done yet, though, down the Great Ocean Road. There's still plenty of cleanup going on. What are you guys doing? Is your part of the job finished now, or will you continue to work with those communities?
Yeah, look, our response phase is kind of now winding up, and we start to reset for what the rest of the summer may look like as we move through the next couple of months. But certainly there's significant work still to be done across a large part of the Great Ocean Road community, but land managers, councils, we're all supporting as we need to those communities to recover from this event.
Okay, because I'm booked in for the Wye River Caravan Park at the end of February.
He can't answer that for you.
No, he doesn't have to. No, just if you could just focus on there.
No,
and just whip that into shape for us, mate. That would be really appreciated.
Don't worry about him, Chris.
What I would say, the townships along the Great Ocean Road are open for business.
Yes.
So again, you know, it's really important we continue to support community over the coming months.
Good on you, Chris. We can't thank you enough for everything you and the amazing SES team do across the whole of Australia, but yeah, most importantly right here where we need you most. Chris Longmore from the SES, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Ian.
Listen to the radio show weekday mornings from 6 on K-Rock. And come on back for some more right here anytime. Tom and Loggie, say thanks.
Hey, Tones and I,
come
to
Geelong.
Come here, over here.
Yeah.
Yeah, do your thing here. That's what we're saying.
Yeah, we are saying it, but also so is Abby from Drysdale. She joined us now. Good morning, Abby.
Good morning.
Now, for those that don't know, Tones and I put a message out at the start of the week and said, hey, I'm back in my home country, one big show. I'll make tickets $10 on the 20th of Feb, all ages, whatever place goes the hardest. And you thought, I want to go the hardest. I want that place to be Geelong. How is your page, Tones and I Come to Geelong, going?
It's going really well. We've made it to 1,500 followers.
Nice.
So that's very exciting,
well done.
But there is some big competition out there, so we do need to keep up with the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
There's some towns with about 3,000 at the moment.
Oh, that's rude.
So it's so rude.
We've got quite a bit of work to do. Taree, New South Wales.
Oh, boring.
Yeah.
And also the Mornington Peninsula, so just across the bay.
Oh, well... Yeah. Why wouldn't we just do it together?
Yeah.
Like, why is the niche stealing?
But have it here.
But like, have it here, and
Mornington,
then the niche
guys,
can get on the ferry.
Get on the ferry and come
Seriously.
Here, you jerks. And also, I mean, the good news about the Taree one is that is all 3,000 people from Taree. So they won't get any more members now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Now, there is a bit of an update. Tones has been commenting on pages and stuff like that. She said, hey, I see you, Tones and I Come to Geelong page. That's exciting. What else has she announced?
She also did put in her comments that she will do two shows.
Oh,
yes. There's been such an uproar of people jump on board and make pages for all their towns.
Yeah.
So two, that's exciting.
Two different locations.
Yes.
Yeah, nice. That would suck if one town got two shows.
Got two,
that
you'd
be
wild, wouldn't you, Abby?
Yes.
Okay. Well, how much longer have we got? Because there's only a couple of days left to really sort of get our names out there, hey?
Yeah, so she announces the location on Sunday. So only really 2 days because she didn't say what time on Sunday.
Okay. So if you want to get
tomorrow.
If you want to get involved, Tones and I Come to Geelong is the Facebook page. Get on Tones and I's socials and say, please come to Geelong, tag that page. We'll pop it up on our socials again.
Mm.
Abby, if she does announce Geelong as the winner, are you going to be able to come on and be like the mayor of the Tones and I Geelong show for us?
Maybe.
Okay.
That would be cool. We'd have
that
to get
real
to
cool.
talk to Tones and I's people to
well,
get Abby on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that is very exciting. And if anybody knows how to program AI to make a whole heap of Facebook accounts.
Oh, yes.
Can you let us know? Because we need about 1,500 accounts real quick.
Yes.
But if you're a normal person as well, we would love you to jump on and like a real person. Doesn't matter if you're normal or not.
Yeah, yeah.
Why did I say that?
That's okay.
I mean,
okay.
Now it's all
That's
cool.
All right.
Good on you, Abs. Love your work, mate. Thanks for the update, and we'll keep it keep across it, and we'll find out on Sunday if she's coming to Geelong, hey?
Yes. Thank you.
It's the Tom and Loggie podcast. It's their radio show in a podcast.
Now, we know Thursday of last week, there was flash flooding, affected Lawn, affected Wye River, Kennet River, Cumberland River, so all that sort of area of the Great Ocean Road. It's been well documented, and we've spoken to lots of people across the week, including yesterday. We caught up with Charmaine George, a friend of mine whose her family was down there. You know, they lost a bit of stuff, but managed to avoid a heap of damage, but what they also lost was reception.
Yes.
With their Optus coverage, and it happened the day before, essentially. Mm. So, and it extended through the Thursday. And Charmaine made a really good point on the show yesterday. She said, you know, if you were down there and you had maybe older kids, because their kids are quite young, but if you had older kids and family members who were off fishing or off, you know, running around with other teenage kids or, you know, whatever, it would have been really hard in that moment to be able to contact them and say, hey, come back or meet us at the wherever, you know. So,
well, actually, someone said when we went to Lawn the other day, imagine this happened at like 3 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
Or midnight.
Oh, my goodness.
And you couldn't get on to people like the who you knew were down there to wake them up and say, like, we're so lucky.
Yeah.
Right.
In so many ways. Anyway, so I did reach out to Optus and they were unable to get someone to actually jump on and talk us through it to explain what happened, but they did give me a statement to cover the Wye River and Lawn outage across the 14th and 15th of January last week, okay?
You are like, this is like four corners.
I know. It's early in the year, mate.
It's one corner.
I'm peaking early.
I know, that's what worries me.
And it's going to be all downhill from here for the rest of the year.
Okay, go on.
So Optus spokesperson said, some customers in the Wye River region of Victoria unfortunately lost connectivity earlier this month when a fibre cable was damaged by the bushfires that swept through the state.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Right. Fire damage caused mobile outage, which started on the 14th of Jan just prior to the flooding. The fibre line impacted is owned and operated by another telecommunications provider. So it's not Optus infrastructure.
But they just jump on board and use it.
Yeah, because that's what happens in Australia. All the major carriers, your Optuses, your Telstras, your TPGs, they operate their own fibre networks, but then also lease fibre and then share infrastructure where needed. So that,
well, yeah, there's no point in having three towers in the one spot,
Exactly, right? Who wants that? Yeah, Nobody wants that. No one wants to look at that or live near that. So that sort of maximises mobile connectivity across Australia by leasing and sharing amongst the companies, right? So they say that particular piece of infrastructure is owned by a different telecommunications provider. So upon alerts being activated, they made contact with the owners.
Okay.
I think we can say it's Telstra. Like, that's fine. It's a Telstra setup, right? And so they contacted Telstra and said, hey, guys, we've got a dropout. They advised that the fibre damage was located in the area north of Wye River, where intense bushfires had swept through. Dangerous weather conditions were still active, right? They advised that conditions meant that they wouldn't be able to send technicians to the damaged cable site until the dangerous weather event had fully passed.
All right. So they don't want to send people into an emergency situation when, you know, actively people are trying to get out of that area.
Exactly, right? So, oh, it's damaged. That's great. When it's safe, we can go back in.
Okay.
Now, the problem is, they say, oh, the Optus is committed to the safety of their staff sort of thing, ish, you know. Might not be exactly their staff, but, you know, the techs that do
go
there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, what's happened during that period whilst they're waiting to be able to get safe access to reinstate the fibre or fix the fibre cable is that the floods happened.
Right. Okay.
So the technicians were only able to safely access the site later the next day, so the Thursday, and completed the repairs at 20 past 8 on PM on the 15th of January, restoring that connectivity to the Wye River area. Okay, so essentially the headline is, it wasn't our gear, we alerted to them as soon as it dropped out, but no one was able to get to it until it was essentially too late to cover the flooding. They do say they understand how distressing the outage in Wye River would have been for the community during what was an already very difficult time. There was also a little mains power outage that covered the Lawn area on the 15th on that same day, but it only took an hour to fix. And they just say their sincere thoughts and best wishes go to Victorians who were impacted by extreme weather events earlier this month.
It's kind of like, you know, stuff happens, right? Yeah. And it's kind of like worst time for it to happen.
Yeah.
And it could have been way worse. We don't understand how all that infrastructure works. So, you know, it sounds like it is hard. But it was also 2026, yeah?
Yeah.
So it sometimes is crazy to me that it's like, I mean, yesterday we chat to a captain out in the ocean, in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, moored off King Island.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, so it's just a weird thing, isn't it, for me to get my head around, to be like, it's 2026 and we still have connectivity issues.
Yeah. Well, so they say emergency service calls can be made where other mobile provider coverage is available or a Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
Or via Wi-Fi calling when internet access exists. So you should be able to make emergency calls, but that's calling 000. Like,
that's
not receiving, you know, updates or warnings or being able to log on to the emergency Vic Emergency website or app or any of that. It's literally just calling 000.
And the Vic Emergency app, I mean, this might be a stupid question without notice. Do they not send out messages? Like, I've never received a message to be like, hey, by the way,
switch on notifications. I think AJ's grabbed his headphones here just to...
In certain situations, if you're like in a zone where it's going to run directly through that, they may send you out emergency warnings to say, hey, you're about to get hit by this. You need to leave now. I think that's how it works. But other than that, you just need notifications set up on your apps and it'll deliver you any messages like that.
Yeah, it'll ding you. All right, thanks, AJ. Anyway, so that's Optus's take on what happened last week. That's why the reception went down and why it took so long to fix.
Tom and Loggy, that was a podcast. And hear the whole experience weekdays live from 6 a.m. Geelong's K-Rock.